What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, how are you, sir? You're going to have to unmute your mic.
I could have swore I clicked it, but man, it is a good day. It's been a couple days back from vacation. It's been a whirlwind, so...
It's always fun and interesting, and when I mean fun and interesting, I mean very hectic and crazy coming back from vacation. Vacations are fun, they're relaxing, but sometimes they feel like they can be more work and hectic when you come back.
Luckily, yes. Now, if we had gone for, say, the whole week out of town and then come back and then had maybe like a day or two to kind of recover and what have you, that'd have been even worse. Luckily we went on vacation, and the first weekend is when we went out of town, got back, had kind of a week to get back into like being in town mode. Right. But still coming back to like 1200 plus emails to go through. That I'm still going through.
That you're still going in. No,
still going through.
Not me, bro. Oh, man. Well, we got a few things happening today. A little bit of stuff to talk about. So I'm excited for that. So I guess without much further ado, we might as well just go ahead and get in.
Football's almost back. Boom.
As you said, football is almost back. Now, yes. We haven't gotten any fun, cool reports or videos yet, but we do know that the rookies have reported today to Flowery Branch. So they report a week before the vets report. So I guess they'll get a jump on like, okay, how'd y'all, get acclimated to what training camp is going to be like, to what staying in the dorms at Flowery Branch and all that jazz. Go ahead and get in some meetings and stuff like that. So
probably a lot of like opening day orientation. Here's where all your classes are. Let's make sure you know where you're going.
Gotta get your books and your binders and wrong kind of orientation.
Still need some binders and some books.
I would imagine like that. I would legitimately imagine some, stuff like books, given time for adjusting of equipment or whatnot from rookie training camp. During training camp, maybe it was, okay, here's a helmet. Now you get a training camp. Here is your helmet. The difference as far as like getting things that are custom fitted by then. I know we always see those videos where they're in the big equipment room trying on, different cleats and gloves. And so I'm sure that, they get their like full equipment and all that jazz.
Yep.
And so, but that does signal the start of like football, really. And then, the start of camp. MJ, MJ says, I heard Bijan's already juking coaches by just walking inside the facility today.
Yeah, he just can't help it. It's just how he exists.
That's right. He exists to break ankles. You know what I'm saying? He exists to get everybody moving and shaking. Dre Murphy says, what up, everybody? How's everyone doing and feeling this hot, nice, pretty Tuesday afternoon? It has been pretty stuffy these last few days. Been pretty hot, hazy down here. Apparently, I guess still from the wildfires up north. I guess
that's the only thing I can think of. Apparently, they got we're in the middle of like a vice grip of these things, because there's one on the east coast in like Alberta and stuff like that, but then on the west coast they got more wildfires out there in like British Columbia. Mm. So it's like we're getting it from both sides.
Getting it from everybody. Well, they need to keep their smoke and smog to themselves. At one point in time this morning, I thought my glasses were dirty. I was like, what in God's name is looking out across my bay door at my office? And I was like, good Lord.
They're just getting back at us for all the California wildfires that were apparently started by Jewish space lasers or something.
Sure,
that's what
man,
I heard.
Not? That or irresponsible electric companies not cutting back trees, and or tree hugging activists not wanting the companies to cut. It just depends on what side of the political fence you fall on, I guess, as to whose fault it was. Chris says it is 85 and sunny out west. It was flirting around 90, 91 down here in Georgia, and tomorrow is supposed to be real hot. Tomorrow is supposed to be like upwards of close to 100 without a heat index, I thought.
Not this past weekend, but the weekend before when I was in Tybee, it was like the actual temperature was something like 94, 95. And it was pretty warm for that, but the real feel that they say was 110.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was steamy. Like a couple weekends ago, we were camping out at a little like resort that's themed after Yogi Bear, and it was pretty stifling.
Yeah.
So, but nothing major to report as of yet. You know, as far as
there is this.
What is this?
I heard my boy Dog, my man Kyle freaking Pitts, the Unicorn, will be going on the pup list. Amen, hallelujah, LOL, and LMBAO.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's what I was about to get into next. Now, granted, this is not from anything official from the team. It is of Kyle Pitts's like personal Instagram. He said, you know, no pup list for him, which is good news. That's what we want to see. Like, hence, I'm wearing the unicorn shirt today. That's what you want. You don't want Kyle Pitts on the physically unable. What are you laughing at?
I just saw a tweet. You may have seen it earlier. I just saw a tweet from Fleek where he said on NFL Live, Desmond Ridder said, the hardest thing about throwing the ball to Drake London and Kyle Pitts is missing him.
Ah, well, we're going to see how true that comes about, because like we know that he's got rapport with London. You know, we saw that in the four games that he started. He had no qualms whatsoever looking at and throwing to Drake London. Like Drake London's in those four games, his production almost doubled from the previous 13 games with Mariota. So now it's like, can he get on that same page with Pitts, and can he get up to speed quickly enough with Kyle Pitts to make some of that magic, you know, happen that we are all like hoping for and wanting. So it was really good, you know, for Pitts to be healthy enough not to be on the physically unable to perform list.
Yeah.
Let's see. What did Dre Murphy is going on over here? He says, rise up. We war ready. So we don't have to get ready a town down. Yep. All that good stuff. Exactly. I was over the weekend, I was absolutely jonesing for some football, and put out a tweet talking about I was watching CFL football on DVR, which you told me I needed to seek help for.
What's wrong? Well, because look, if you're going to watch record like old football, you have access to NFL.com and NFL Game Pass.
Yeah, I know, but I've already watched all games like 10, 15 times.
Well, okay, but then watch some other game besides the Falcons game, because you weren't watching a Falcons game on that CFL DVR rewatch. I mean, come on.
What? I mean, look, where else can you see, you know, Falcons legend Dominique Davis run a touchdown in? And
not in the NFL, because he couldn't.
And I had to stop for a second. I was like, Dominique Davis, is that the same like Dominique Davis that was the backup quarterback for a while here in Atlanta? And it was, oddly enough. And also, so some of the other players, like Nick Marshall, the cornerback, the QB from Auburn turned cornerback.
Yep.
He is now a cornerback up in the CFL. Like, jokingly or not, I don't follow the CFL, but like I do catch it when it's on or when I got nothing else to do. And part of it is hey, like, who are some of the names that I recognize that didn't make it, you know, here?
Yeah.
Like, you're going up there and making it. And that's part of the fun.
And I took a shot a little bit. Like, you know, you're watching him there because he couldn't hack it in the NFL. And look, the NFL is an exclusive club. Only the best, generally only the best of the best make it. Even the guys that are, backups to the backups, the special teams guys, those are extraordinary athletes, all of them. So to not be able to make it in the NFL is not like, how dare you?
No.
If the way you can make a living is to go to the CFL or go to the XFL or go wherever, and that's how you make your living, more power to you, brother. Get as much as you can. And maybe try to make your way back to the big league. But
exactly.
But if I'm going to watch a recorded.
Well, it was on YouTube TV. Okay. I just opened up YouTube and I saw it. I was like, oh, hey, let's watch that. But Justin Hardy plays up in the CFL.
Yeah.
Old Freak Magic. I enjoy it. Plus it's, I like some of the things that they do, like having the wide receivers go into motion, you know, well, but like get a running start before they call it the waggle. I find that stuff like interesting and the things that you can do. Now the three downs to get a first down, I don't like that, but you know,
it just doesn't seem right.
And I wonder how many touchdowns would Mahomes throw if he had a full 10-yard end zone.
Like 20 yard in
or 20 yard in, whatever it is. Like, yeah. Cause it's double the size. Like, dude, he would be,
I think it's double the size and it's even, the field is wider.
I think, yeah, the field is wider and it's like, it's a huge field.
And yeah, I think they play on like essentially a like soccer.
I think so. Pitch. Mm-hmm. I think you know, so.
So they have basically a big soccer pitch. They took the whole soccer pitch and they're like, all right,
right, football field.
There's 100 yards. We still got all this extra space. Just make it end zone. We're good.
That's right. And so, it would be nuts to see like Mahomes or Josh Allen or even Jalen Hurts with that much room to work. Let's see. Okay. Now here's like the big question that popped up on Twitter that kind of broke out yesterday with the franchise tag deadline, you know, coming and going, like the deadline for if you were tagged to sign a deal. Like, so Evan Ingram got a new deal with Jacksonville, and I'm trying to think of who are the other ones. There was one other franchise tag person that got a deal, but the no franchise tag running back got a new deal. So that was Josh Jacobs, that was Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott still out on the market, these kind of things. So the question then started to get brought up, like, does elite running backs matter? And that's like some of the questions that I want to like pose to the chat, and I want me and you to discuss, because I was going to see if I could find the tweet real quick. It was, let's see. Sorry, I got somebody calling me. I'm trying to find, it was a tweet talking, because like once all that happened, you had a lot of people, like a lot of running backs pop off about how much running backs get paid and how it's, you know, ridiculous that they take the kind of punishment that they take and are deemed to be, you know, basically replaceable or, you know, disposable, you know. Yeah. And it doesn't help when you have a guy, and I hate to say it like this, when they start to get devalued the way they have, and you have a guy like a Tyler Allgeier that was drafted in the 5th round and in a rookie season ran for over 1,000 yards.
I mean, Mike Shanahan probably – like single-handedly killed the running back market with a few exceptions, right? So you got your Adrian Petersons, you got your Derrick Henrys,
right?
You got those guys, right? But like Mike Shanahan was one of the first guys that like literally like you were putting guys off the street. Undrafted guys were coming in and like leading the league in rushing and leading the league in rushing touchdowns. And, you know, but at the end of the day, it like what that highlights to me is not that elite running backs don't matter. It's that elite running backs are elite running backs, not necessarily strictly because they're elite running backs. Right. That they are, and I'm not saying this, but you can say the same thing about elite quarterbacks are not elite quarterbacks. Elite wide receivers are not elite wide receivers. Which again, and I talked about this at multiple points in the offseason, the most important on offense outside of the quarterback. Right. But even then, you know, you could fudge it a little bit on the quarterback side. The most important anything on the offense is that offensive line. All right. Because your offensive line opens up holes for your running back. It protects your quarterback. And then it gives your quarterback time to find a guy to get open, which if you give it enough time on 99% plus of plays, a wide receiver is going to eventually get open. Now, can your quarterback get it to him when he's open? It's a whole different matter. But if your offensive line absolutely stinks, doesn't matter how good your quarterback is.
Can't play from his back.
Yeah. Not like 99% of the time. It doesn't matter if you got Tom Brady back there or Trent Dilfer. That offensive line is going to make, if it's bad enough, it's going to make them both look just as bad.
And here's like the deal with the, you know, we talk about, I think the problem is nowadays we throw around the term generational and elite way too much. Because yes. I can look at Mahomes and automatically see that he is an elite quarterback. He won the Super Bowl last year with like Isaac Pacheco and Travis Kelce. Like his superstar like weapon was Travis Kelce. Outside of that, you had, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster, who they didn't even retain. You know, that you had Isaac Pacheco, who's an undrafted free agent. You had, you know, Justin Watson, who nobody's heard of. Mecole Hardman, who they did not retain. You see what I'm saying? It was like, yep. Very rarely do you have a situation where the quarterback elevates that many other players. Now, like we can go ahead and hit this if you're ready for it.
Yep. All right.
Appreciate it, Fred.
Thank you very much, Fred, for the $2.
That's right. He says, I think running backs should be paid big money.
But why?
I would like to know why he thinks so. But here's the deal. How many teams could get pushed up the rung, like, or could potentially win the Super Bowl, you know, with an elite running back? Like, you have – the current argument is the last however many Super Bowl winners didn't have an elite running back, so therefore elite running backs don't matter. Okay, well, the question is, how many other teams like could have gotten there had they had, you know, a back that could do the things? Like, okay, take San Francisco last year. Mm-hmm. Like, if any of them, we're going to get into the Play Callers podcast here in a little bit. So if any of y'all have listened to that, stick around because we're going to talk about that. Until they traded for Christian McCaffrey, their offense was sputtering. It wasn't in the tank, but it didn't take back off until they got McCaffrey.
Yep.
And McCaffrey, because of the, like the step backwards in QB that they had, McCaffrey, his ability allowed them to do a bunch of different things.
Yes.
In the offense, it allowed them to open up. And like I said, something we're going to get into in a minute, that inside toss play that they can now do that with Debo. They could do that with McCaffrey. They could do that with Juszczyk, and they could do essentially the exact same play and get it from a handful of different platforms and different formations. And it allowed and that got unlocked, you know, for Shanahan because of a guy like Christian McCaffrey, who is one of the elite running backs in the league right now.
Well, the reason it happened immediately with McCaffrey was as soon as he stepped on the field, there was no, oh man, you know, we didn't know anything about this guy. Now we have to account for him because of what he did to Team A. We don't want to be Team B on that list of this you know, team that he made look silly, right? So now they're having to do it. Whereas McCaffrey, as soon as he walks out of the tunnel, that defense is aware of him. That yep. defense is looking for him. The defense is looking at him. All right. So the defense now, you know, McCaffrey made plenty of plays himself. You know, they had lots of plays for him and they were able to execute those plays. But they open up so much more because now the focus goes on him because of who he is and the talent he is. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas a guy like, I don't know, Jerick McKinnon, I mean, he's a good guy, but you add him to that team and they're like, okay, that's just another guy.
Well, see, but here's the deal though, with Jerick McKinnon in general, like Shanahan tried to add him. And yeah. unfortunately for them, he gets hurt 2 years in a row. And so they finally, you know, cut bait on him. Yeah. And who picks him up? The Chiefs. And the Chiefs re-sign him. And so, like, here's, okay, Flavius says, I'm not sure the question is, do elite running backs matter as much as the question is, do they matter much? Are they worth paying that much? If they're McCaffrey, that's one thing. Ezekiel is another. Here's the follow-up question that I will pose to you, Flavius, or anybody, is we overpay mediocre quarterbacks because the quarterback position is so hard to find, right? But we constantly cast off, you know, average to above average running backs because we could find them everywhere, which I don't necessarily agree that you can find them everywhere, because if that's the case, like I've just named you four or five running backs that the Chiefs used. And mm-hmm. before I can name you five, six, seven running backs that the, Philadelphia Eagles have used over the past few years, but because it's a devalued position, it doesn't get like talked about a ton. But if you were going through quarterbacks as much as, you know, last year with the 49ers, they went through three quarterbacks, and now we're talking about changing a rule of how many you can, you know, carry and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so the only reason why I even bring this up is somebody puts it here, like Jay Black says, elite running backs only matter because of Bijan on this team. Bijan will make all the difference to the run and the pass game. That's the reason why I bring it up here.
Right.
That's the reason why I bring up this topic with us is because of Bijan, right?
Right. So here's what I'll say. If you're looking for just a running back, right, to do the normal running back things, run the ball, pass block, you know, sufficiently enough, and a guy that can go out in the flats, maybe do like a little corner, you know, like a little angle route or whatever, right out in front of the quarterback, 5 yards down the field, to be that outlet guy and make some plays for you there on occasion. If you're looking for that, and that's all you need, you can find those a dime a dozen everywhere in the NFL. And they'll do it, in most cases, perfectly satisfactorily. You know, and then now you take that same guy and you marry him with a good system and a good scheme with the players appropriate to that scheme, specifically the O-line, and you have good blocking wide receivers and stuff like that, you can make a guy like that into something bigger. Okay. The difference makers, the Christian McCaffreys, hopefully Bijan Robinson, are the guys that can literally play three or four different positions essentially. They can go out wide. They can play in the slot. They can go in the backfield. They can go out for passes out of the backfield. They can run. They can block. They can do all the things they need to do, plus more. When they're that kind of versatile, those are the guys that are worth paying, right? The guys that are not worth necessarily paying the big bucks are the guys that do, you know, that are just running backs, because that's just not like we have. It'd be one thing if we were just saying it to say it, right? That's what I'll say. It's one thing if it's just being said, mm-hmm. but then when you actually go look at like how things work in the NFL, it didn't bear out. But if you go watch the NFL historically, especially over the last 20 years, okay, you see guys that are, if not leading, they're like up there in the yards per, you know, yards rushing. You see guys in there it's like different guys every single year. It's this guy and then that guy. Yeah, you have some of the same names that are up there every year, but you just get like, all of a sudden this guy breaks out, and then this guy breaks out, and then this guy breaks out. It's like, who are these guys? Where are they coming from? This, you know, he looked like crap last year. They brought in a new coach who changed up the scheme, and all of a sudden he's a, you know, 1,300 yard rusher. And you're like, where did this come from?
Well, see, to me, all that, and I agree, but in a sense of like devil's advocate, a lot of that can be attributed to a lot of that same type of argument can be attributed to a lot of other positions, in my opinion. Like, how many quarterbacks had they gotten in a different situation not been busts, right?
Absolutely.
How many like wide receivers, you know, could have been, you know, stars had a coach stuck with them just a little bit longer, or, you know, what have you. You know, we bring up a lot of the times, you know, Roddy White was widely considered a bust before he got a consistent quarterback like Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
Like, how many other receivers would look much better had they had a more consistent quarterback throwing them the ball, right?
Which is weird. Like, Roddy White actually had his first breakout season the year before Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he really took off once Matt Ryan came on the scene and was able to get him the ball, build up that trust with him, and, like, throw it to him in situations where maybe some quarterback, a new quarterback that doesn't have that is like, oh, he's covered. And Matt's like, he's not covered. I'm still right. Tossing it. I don't care. So
now here's a solution that I think would be, Burnett says, I think a fix could be to hand out shorter first contracts for running backs as a rule. 3 years and a fourth year option would help tremendously with a second contract, in my opinion. Because if you think about Bijan, technically speaking, if he really pops off, right, and he does what we hope and what we think he's going to do, this team legitimately has 6 years of team control. If you add the fifth year option and franchise tag for 1 year, like, so take basically the Saquon, like, you can have the team can have 6 years of cheap team control before they have to pay him. And by the time that 6 years is up, because of the pounding that a running back takes, you know, in pass blocking, in, you know, the type of hits they take when, you know, being tackled, like they do, like, he could be on the other side of his prime before he ever gets another contract.
Yep. Well, that's why you see guys like James White. That guy played for quite a few years, like well into his 30s, but that's because he was not a primary running back. He was, right. You know, he may have been the primary running back, but he wasn't used that way, mm-hmm. right? He was more of, we need a change of pace, put him out there. He was really good at running like the running back routes. You know, he's really good at making guys miss in the open field. And so he was able to do a lot of stuff where he wasn't taking big hits. So he was able to play a lot longer. A guy like Algier, probably going to have a relatively short career.
Right.
Whereas a guy like a Bijan, potentially, if he's as elusive as we believe him to be, you know, early on is not going to have quite so many big hits on him. And so he'll probably last a little bit longer. But if he breaks out rookie year and does some of the things we think he's capable of doing, he's going to see a lot of usage. But granted, if he sees a lot of usage out wide in the slot and stuff like that, he's probably getting tackled by corners. He's getting tackled by safeties. And while some safeties can absolutely lay you out and hit you hard and all that stuff, there's a big difference between getting hit by a safety and getting hit by a linebacker or a defensive lineman over and over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. Now, because Brian Friedman, he nails it pretty good. You know, running back is a volatile, injury-prone position. End of story.
Yep.
Exactly. And it sucks because, you know, especially, and we can transition into this as well. If you listen to the Play Callers podcast,
you need to listen to it.
Yeah. It's a 5 episodes. It's 5.5-6 hours. It, you know, take you one good day or, you know, a good week, you know, depending on how much time you got to listen to all of it. But I've got one more episode left, and it really highlights with these guys that we consider to be, you know, great play callers, McDaniels and Shanahan and McVay, and the run game matters so much to what they're able to do and the space that they're able to create on the field. For those who follow me on Twitter, I put out a clip from it where Shanahan was, you know, talking about running the ball, you know, 45, 50 times a game and going if I can do that, then that really absolutely, you know, makes the play action very deadly and, you know, puts the defense on his heels, all that other, jazz. And that really brings to light how important, you know, a good running back is and how much more important an elite running back should be. Don't you think legitimately these past 2 years, all contract, whatever being aside, had Arthur Smith been able to bring Derrick Henry with him, he would have done so. That was one of the first things he had to answer when, you know, being here in Atlanta. He is talking about the run game, and he had him to say, look, you're not always going to be able to find a Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
You know, and something we were talking about before the show popped off, you know, Derrick Henry really became Derrick Henry with Arthur Smith calling plays. So, a good running game is beneficial to a coach, it's beneficial to a young QB, it's beneficial to any QB who is not an elite QB. I'm going to be, hopefully, for the Vikings fans' sake, Madison, I think that's his last name, the backup of Dalvin Cook. You know, they let Dalvin Cook walk.
Yeah.
So hopefully Madison is going to be able to pick up that load. And, you know, because if y'all think Kirk Cousins is mediocre right now, and he kind of is, he's going to be even more mediocre if defenses can, you know, tee off on him, play in and play out.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's just a tough situation for guys like Eckler, you know, for some of those guys, simply because, you know, the prevailing thought around the NFL is just these guys, you know, they're not good. They don't want to put a big percentage of their salary cap they can put towards what they feel are more important.
Oh yeah,
and more and harder to replace, right? So I guess that's the other thing is that, like, you know, part of that is, you know, we talked about we're overpaying mediocre quarterbacks, but if we're talking about quarterbacks, like the top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL, or we'll even say it this way, the starting quarterbacks for the NFL are some of the best quarterbacks in the world, period. Okay. Even the worst of them. Okay. They're the worst in the NFL when you're playing against the best of the best in the world. Okay.
Oh man, you dropped Baker Mayfield on the XFL, and he's gonna look like Peyton Manning.
Yeah. So, at the end of the day, all of these guys are really good. Okay, so but then there's guys that like are the difference makers at quarterback. Those are really hard to find.
Barry.
Really hard. Okay. Even at wide receiver, though, wide receiver is a little bit easier. Wide receiver is still to you don't just find Julio's, hanging from trees everywhere. Those are rare breeds, right? Now you can find competent, good wide receiver play in a lot of places, but when if you find like the crazy good ones, then you want to hold on to them. And that goes for, especially on defense. If you find good cornerbacks, you want to try to hold on to them. You find good safeties, you want to try to hold on to them if you can. The running backs, though, the problem has just been like teams that were successful, and then they let their elite running back move on to get paid by some other team, and then they bring in some rookie guy or they bring in some journeyman running back, shows up to the team. Fits right in. And then next thing you know, it's like we were so worried about losing this guy, but this guy's come in and we kind of haven't really missed a beat. If anything, we've gotten better. So when that kind of thing happens, and it happens every year, and it happens over and over again on many teams, when that happens, the result is what we're seeing now, which is we're going to get the most out of you. When you come asking for a big payday, we're not going to give it out because it's not worth it to us. We can go, pay for much harder to find other things, and just that way we're it's just a more efficient way for in their minds, it's a more efficient way to use the money they do have.
Right.
So
And no, yeah, I agree. I'm not necessarily advocating for like allocating a ton of your cap space or anything like that on a running back. 'Cause
yeah.
even with all this being said, in the sense of team building, I understand that there are certain positions that don't garner as much resource allocation as others. QB being the first one, the guy who throws the ball, the guy who protects the blind side of the guy who throws the ball, the guy who gets after the guy who throws the ball, and then the guy who catches the ball. Like
Yeah.
these are, and then the guy who tries to stop the guy catching the ball. Like these
Yeah.
are the like premium positions. So I completely understand that is such a thing. I wish we could figure out a better solution to the running back issue, because year in and year out, they're starting to get more and more devalued. Maybe now with the what I'm calling is Arthur Smith being the counterpunch to the modern defense, their latest punch, Arthur Smith seems to be wanting to be the counterpunch. Maybe we buck the trend again and we do pay Bijan Robinson a ton of money. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the future holds.
Again, if we look at it from the perspective of wildest hopes and dreams here, my wildest hopes and dreams are essentially Bijan Robinson becomes the Atlanta Falcons version of Marshall Faulk, just with a little bit more power. Okay. Marshall Faulk was that guy that could run the ball, could run between the tackles, could run outside, made you miss. He could get you a couple extra yards if he had to, just bolt, putting his shoulder down. But he also was dynamic out of the backfield in the pass game. He would line up in the slot. You do like if he becomes that, and he becomes that kind of a piece for the Falcons, and he can stay, injury free as much as possible. If he can do that kind of stuff and be that kind of integral piece, then I think you're going to, they're going to pay him.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's just a running back, if it turns out 3 years, 4 years down the line, the guy really hasn't panned out from a receiving perspective, but he's been a great runner. I don't know if you're going to pay him
Well,
the
I
big
mean, you look at
bucks.
it like this. I hate to bring, this up in a sense, but you had Le'Veon Bell, who was, for a 2, 3 year stretch, like the best runner, was an amazing receiver out of the backfield. When it came time for him to get paid, Like, he chose to basically sit out because he wanted to get paid like a runner and like a receiver, which I can't blame him for wanting that kind of money. That's the production that he was giving the team. But then he goes to the Jets and doesn't do anything. So, you know, he gets hurt, injury prone, and eventually released. And that's unfortunately what happens with running backs. But, you know, I guess in the sense of like what you were hearing on the Play Callers, you know, podcast, is that you hopefully, you know, the scheme can continue to develop, you know, good running backs. That's where the coaches, you know, come in. Now, ATL supporters got, he says, I got Bijan winning rookie of the year. There's a real good possibility. If he hits the ground, pun intended, running like we think he's going to, he very well could win rookie of the year. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Brian says Bijan will be the second highest paid running back, only behind McCaffrey, and rookie who has done zero yet. It's kind of crazy. To me, that highlights what we're talking about. The fact that a rookie running back who got picked in the first round, who hasn't carried the ball yet, is the second highest paid back in the league right now.
Yeah.
To me, when you have guys out there like an Austin Ekeler, who means as much to, you know, his team's production over these past few years as he's meant what Saquon Barkley meant to the Giants last year.
Yep.
Like, to me, that shouldn't be the case, but not everything's fair, right? Not everything is equal. So, such as life. I think it was Brian earlier. I'm gonna see if I can find it. He made a comment about, mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be running backs. That's what he says. He says, don't let your babies grow up to be running backs. And in a sense, like, if the league continues to devalue the position the way it has, you know, you're going to have, like, you don't see that many fullbacks anymore. So, Woon Carter, we appreciate you greatly. Says, rise up, Pound Frank family. Are you guys attending training camp? Sorry, I'm tuning in late. Don't be sorry. We're just glad you're here.
Absolutely. And thank you very much, Woon, by the way.
That's right. That's right. So I guess we will go on to the next one. Who's going to camp? We are going to camp. I'm just not 100% sure if it's going to be the first weekend of open camp or the second weekend of open camp.
I want to go.
When do you want?
I want to go if I can, and I'm off. Like, I'm on call this week, so I'll be
off call.
I will be off call, and I have a comp day, so I have a 3-day weekend next weekend. I'm wanting to go the 29th. Mm. Is when I would like to go, because it's generally 3 days into camp.
Yep.
Most of the time that I've been, I've generally gone on the third day, because 9 times out of 10, that's when they're first putting on pads.
Yeah. Well, my only deal there for me personally is I think that the only thing that may keep me from going next weekend, the 29th, is that my wife's birthday is the 25th, which is in the middle of the week.
But that's not the 29th.
You're right. That is not the 29th. It's a week from today. So depending on what she wants to do.
So you celebrate this weekend. Early birthday.
Early birthday. I don't know if I could get away with early birthday and then and then skip out so I can go watch Falcons practice. No, we'll see what generally speaking, it's in the morning. So there's usually a good possibility, like, you know, if we do a take her out to dinner kind of thing, you know, I can be back that evening and ready for shenanigans such as that. So yeah. I'm going to tentatively say me and you will link up and we'll go up there the 29th. I expect you to wear your pound for pound hoodie.
I will bring it with me and leave it in the car when we get
when we get there. Oh, Willie Doc, appreciate you, my man. He says, hey, P4P, thanks for getting us through the dead period. Hey, man, we tried. What would one unexpected surprise for training camp you would like? An unexpected surprise. Huh, that is an extremely good question. What would be an unexpected surprise if...
Well, I don't know if I can say... Okay, unexpected surprise... Scotty Miller shows out more than what we expect him to do. Like he kind of push Matt Collins for the wide receiver two position.
Okay, you speak on that, and somebody I don't know if you've seen, like, there's people who have like tagged me in it, and I've actually watched it now, but Brett Coleman on Twitter, he does a lot of fantasy football stuff and a lot of like film breakdown and all this other jazz. They did their Falcons segment. And I was like, all right, let me see what the media at Broad, you know, who like pays attention in a level right. that I, you know, let me see what they have to say. And they were actually speaking really glowingly of Mac Hollins, talking about that he could be like legitimately a steal for what we paid for him. And so I guess I will say the surprise, I'll go something similar, is if Mac Hollins, I guess I'll go the other way, if he really like cements himself as wide receiver two, because this whole offseason I've been using wide receiver two like loosely. You know, because I, in my mind, it's gone, you know, Pitts, London, Janu. And then past those three, it's been just a smattering of Miller, Bijan, Mac. So if Mac really, if Mac then turns this team into a three wide, a 3-by-1, 11 personnel offense in a sense. Like, if he forces the issue where Arthur goes, I can't not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they can come into camp going, okay, I got this idea of we're going to be a 22 personnel team with Janu Smith, Pitts, Bijan Robinson, a mix of Bijan, Cordell, and Tyler. But then you get to camp and you see Miller balling out and Mac balling out, and you go, I can't just not have these guys out on the field.
Yeah.
I think that would be my biggest surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, all of a sudden, you know, they're having to like guys are not getting the ball because they feel like, you know, like, the ball's just being spread out so much because everybody's balling out.
Right.
You know, that kind of situation, which you want to be in. And I don't think anybody on the team is going to be like complaining if that kind of stuff's happening, because chances are, if that kind of thing's happening, you're looking at, this team probably doing some real special things. So I'm not too worried about that.
Right. I agree completely.
But we'll get to you, Charleston, yeah. Here in a second. Yeah. But basically, like, if Scotty Miller turns out to be more than just like the guy that you just kind of have a guy that, like, you know, you throw a bomb to, you know, once or twice a game. If he becomes like a legit underneath crossing routes and yak guy, and you know, if he can also take the top off the defense, if he becomes that kind of guy and like really like pushes Mac Hollins, and then Mac Hollins as a result turns it up a notch, look, that kind of stuff.
Then that's awesome. Like, those to me, those are good things. Charleston says he's blessed to have us to watch, which we appreciate, a week before training camp. He said, he goes, I'm excited to see the smaller roles in the offense, the Parker Hesse's and Keith Smith's in the run game. That's the like unsung heroes in a lot of aspects. Yep. Like, I remember not necessarily 100% understanding exactly what I was watching until we really saw it in full swing, but the amount of like motion that Parker Hesse went into, And then he was always blocking. And I was like, if they don't throw this guy the ball, they're not going to respect that motion. I wasn't thinking about it in the way that I should have been, which is like, you know, Parker Hesse was a very pivotal part of opening up that run game and having like those crackback blocks and stuff like that. So it's he's going to be a very interesting piece. Mactown Dirty says, what up, fellas? What's going on, Mac?
What up, Mac?
How y'all doing today? MJ says,
yep, I just saw that.
Yeah, he goes, I'm excited to see Eddie Goldman finally. If we can get him back to his prime days, watch out. This D line is deep.
The thing that excites me with him is not the sacks.
It's that middle. It's that run stuff that is.
Yeah, it's the run stuff, and if he can play to his capabilities, the next level that can lead to for the linebackers, right?
Right. I think what he represents between him, Graham, Onyemata, Grady, you know, Horn to an extent, and some of the other guys represents a very deep defensive line rotation, like deeper than we've had than I can even remember. And like if Goldman comes in and is like 75% of what he was, you know, back in the Chicago days, adding that as a rotational piece with Onyemata, with Grady, with, you know, Taquan Graham coming back from injury, like we should see a level of Grady that we hadn't seen yet. And that in and of itself is exciting.
Yes, absolutely. You know,
and that's not even bringing up, you know, the Calais Campbells, what we have on edge with like Lorenzo and Ebiketie and what Zach Harrison might like. This D line for the first time in a while, like the potential, like has me, you know, excited.
Yes, absolutely. Like just in general, the defense, like I haven't been this excited for a defense probably since, I want to say probably like 2016, like going into the 2016 season, I was kind of excited about like, what could some of the young guys do? Some of the, you know, guys that were going into their second year, that kind of thing. I was super high on that, and it just, you know, I was super excited about it. So.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. That's the thing. Is like I'm sitting there just thinking, like it was 2017, 2018 was the last time we had something that considered that you could even see to be a somewhat consistent, you know, defense. And as Chris echoes something you've said in the past, is like if the, you know, this D line is going to let the linebackers eat, and like that could be, you know, part of their, you know, part of the design, you know, part of the plan is to, you know, because right now they haven't, that's one of the question marks that we have is the linebacker group. Because as of right now, you know of, you know, Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson.
Yep.
Outside of those two, you got Michael Walker, who's been kind of up and down. Like, how does Nielsen, can he get anything else out of Walker? Because Walker was somebody that I was intrigued by, you know, coming out of college for his versatility. I felt like he could be kind of like an Isaiah Simmons, the hype that Isaiah Simmons had coming out of Clemson. I thought he could be a poor man's version. He's been up and down, but can, you know, Nielsen unlock something out of him, right? Jerome Wade, talking about the floor is 6 wins, the ceiling is 8.5 wins. What do y'all think? I think the floor is actually a little higher, to be honest with you. I think we have a far more talented roster than we had last year.
Yep.
By paper, we have an easier schedule. So I'm actually going to be disappointed if we come away with 7 wins again. I'm going to be very disappointed.
This is probably the most talent we've had on a roster for the Falcons, like legit talent. Well, what seems to be legit talent for quite a few seasons.
Like I almost want to say that the floor would be like 9 wins. That's kind of what I'm looking at.
I'm, you know, like the floor, I could see and get behind somebody saying the floor is 6, maybe 7 wins. Like, I can see that.
Oh, I can understand the thinking. I'm not,
because you never know what, like, the how the ball's going to bounce, you know, just freak, unlucky stuff, injuries, all those things. But if we're talking, everybody's, you know, relatively healthy, right? You know, normal bumps and bruises of playing in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, I honestly think that the floor is probably 7 or 8 wins. The ceiling could be 11 to 12. That, like, the absolute, I think if the Falcons play absolutely the way that they want to play, I think, you know, I just think that, you know, 11, 12 wins is probably where we top out at. We could go a little bit higher, but I think 12 wins is probably at the top end.
I think I tend to agree there. I think the high end is 11, 12, 13 wins, something like that. I think that would be real tough. I do think that I think the floor is 9 wins or like 8, 9 wins. I think the ceiling is wild card divisional champs. Like, I think the ceiling is, you know, playoffs, like first round playoffs. And I think the floor is 8, 9 wins. That's kind of where I'm at right now. This all could change, like, watching them in preseason. Because in, you know, 21, when Smith first got here, you know, I was pretty pumped going into the, you know, going into the season. I went and watched that first preseason game, and I come out going, oh, God, we're in trouble.
Yep.
Because I saw that O-line, and I was like, this ain't good, you know. So, Uncle Steve, he says, evening, gents. I was very concerned about Dahlman last season, but I really haven't heard much about him this offseason. Are you comfortable with him going forward? Going forward, yes, like this season. And the reason why I say that is because he got, just like Ritter, he got better as the season went on. The last, you know, 4 or 5 games, like, he was moving athletically like they wanted him to move. You know, he was getting out in space. He wasn't getting blown. You got like a gremlin over there?
No.
Yeah. Okay. There's something that's like clunk, 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 clunk. Anyway, I thought maybe you were getting attacked. I didn't know if I needed to send help. Anyway, and so, I think Dahlman getting something you've talked about a handful of times is, you know, Dahlman got better towards the end of the season. He got his snaps under control, which may have just been him thinking too much. I don't know. But, you know, that got under control. And as long as that continues, they have talked glowingly about him. So,
They've talked glowingly about him. Ritter's talked glowingly about him. I think, again, you know, everybody, you know, wants to be like, you know, the guy had a lot of problems with snaps. Well, okay, yeah, he was also a second-year guy. And starting his career, you know, the first start of his career was last year. You know, so, yeah, he had some, you know, some issues early on. He worked on them, got better, progressed throughout the season. And, you know, I think that as we move through the offseason with this O-line coach and everything, I'm really not that worried about it. Now, could things go south with it? Sure, absolutely could. Am I worried about it right now, today? Not really. But also, just remember one of the best adages when it comes to offensive linemen. If you're not hearing their name called, things are going great.
Right. Yep.
Would you hear their name called? That's not what you want.
Fierce ATL lady. What up, P for P? What's going on? Glad you're in here.
How's
tonight.
It going?
Glad. I mean, always glad to have. I used to listen to a show that when like a female, because it was like majority male, you know, when a female came in and then like made a comment, they always tried to highlight it. And it was something that, like, you know, made me smile, because the fact that anybody wants to listen to us is awesome. And also, you don't get a lot of, you know, female Falcon fans that are in chats, or at least not in our chats anyway. Yeah. Maybe it's because of my face. Who knows?
I like Atlanta Sport here. I got the Falcons winning more games and going to the playoffs.
There it is. That's the floor and the ceiling.
Yeah, I really don't care how many wins it is. Like, obviously, I want to see a bunch of wins. Mm-hmm. I would much rather watch a season where we win a bunch of times than we lose more times than not. But at the end of the day, if we win the division, winning 8 games, 9 games,
I'm totally fine with that.
If we win it with 7 games, I would like to have more than 7 wins in the season for once. But if that wins the division somehow, and we get into the playoffs, I really don't care. Once we get to the playoffs, I don't care what our record was before that. Mm-hmm. I would like to see like a 12-5 kind of season, 11-6, 13-4.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I would love a double digit win.
It's still weird to try to do the math for 17 in my head.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Because you don't get.
I'm so used to.
You can't be 500. It's either winning or not, which I kind of like that aspect, because I never really knew what to think about a 508-8 season. But anyway, MacTown says, do you think our run stopping up front has anything to do with the decision making on Evans? Now, that's something I've tried to think about. As Evans was your leading, tackler last year, and he is still out on the market, it makes me wonder, like, if the fact that Nielsen brought in his guy in Caden Ellis, Rashawn Evans was a Dean Pease guy. Like, because Tennessee let Evans walk. Well, he snapped him up, and Pease was the one that was like, I don't know why he was out there. I'm glad he was. He was a Pease guy.
Yep.
Caden Ellis is obviously worked with Nielsen last year. Yep. And I think the presence of Caden Ellis is one of the main reasons why Evans is still on the market, at least for our aspect.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts there.
I'm in the same boat with you. I also want to show this real quick. I wholeheartedly disagree with this. in order to keep Arthur Smith from getting fired, needs to get us to the national. I'm assuming you mean the NFC Championship game, but national championship in the playoffs. Like if we win the division, no matter what happens after that, his job is safe. If we're competitive this year, we don't win the division but make it to the playoffs, then his job is safe. If
if the rest of the NFC pops off and for whatever reason, we're competitive as hell, we win a lot more games, but we don't win the division because, I don't know, say the Saints go nuts and we don't make it to the wild card because everybody else goes nuts. But you see marked improvement in the first year that Arthur Smith has really had, because something y'all got to keep in mind. Brian's got it. The right of it here. He's the Smiths. It's not even warm. The thing you have to keep in mind, for the past 2 years, in a lot of people's estimations, Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot have overachieved.
Yes.
Like
especially
before
the, last year.
Yeah, right. You had the worst roster. You had the most historic dead cap of any team ever. Like, in a lot of ways, this is Arthur Smith's, like, first real year of being able to go grocery shopping.
Yep.
The past 2 years he's been in college eating ramen.
Yep.
He finally graduated, got his degree, got his first paycheck, and went and bought steaks.
Yep.
Now we're going to find out if he can actually cook them steaks and cook them right.
Yep.
Okay. Like, if I'll say this, if we turn in another 7-10 season, finish fourth in the NFC South, especially the way the rest of the NFC is currently constructed, like, they're going to have to start answering questions.
Yeah.
You're going to start getting side eye. Like, yes. What are you doing?
Yes.
But if everything else pops off and we do good, win 9-10 games, but for somehow lose the NFC South and don't make it into the wild card, but you can see absolute marked progress. No, his seat won't even be warm, even in that aspect.
No, like I said, this is the first year Somebody said it, like, this is his first real roster, right? He put together a roster as best he could the last couple of years, especially last year. Last year was, again, I went into the season expecting like 4, maybe 5 wins if we were lucky, you know, and we were not only, and it wasn't just the record, right? It wasn't just 7-10. Yeah, it sucked to go 7-10 in the second year. The thing that just through watching all the games last year was, when I watched those games last year, as opposed to the year before, is I still had fun watching the games. Yeah, we came out on the short end more times than not. Yeah, maybe we made some mistakes that like kept us from being in a better position. That's a possibility. But at the end of the day, we also had, you know, like so many games where I went in just not expecting to be competitive at all. And we were hyper competitive all year long. We played hard. We generally didn't beat ourselves most of the times. Okay. Like, we didn't beat ourselves with some of the stupid mental errors in you know, the vast majority of cases. We beat ourselves with like physical errors, which you talk to a lot of, NFL, well, just football coaches in general, like the physical mistakes, the fumbles, the interceptions, depending on what kind of interception it was. But if we're talking like he threw it, maybe it's a little high, but you expect your wide receiver to get it. It tips off his hands and then it goes to a defender. Those kinds of situations, yeah, those suck, but you can live with those. You can live with, a roughing the passer penalty, because it's the physical errors that are just going to happen sometimes because you can't really do much about it. But the mental stuff with, we didn't have a lot of penalties most of the times. We were very disciplined, in just about every game. So, when I saw that kind of the way, when I saw how that stuff went, that made me excited for the team more so than the record, than the year before. The year before, yeah, we won 7 games, won the same amount of games, but the games that we didn't win, like, it was bad. It was real bad. And I never really got that feeling last year.
I'll put it to you, the fact that we only got blown out in one game last year, and that was the Bengals. We were in every game. All these things, lead me to believe that we're going to have a better year. Now, this is the one thing that I'll be interested in. OMT says Ritter needs the year to develop into a starting QB. And it's going to take a minute, right? That's the part where that's the one thing that I'm like somewhat concerned about is like, does Ritter hit the ground running? Like, he's been in the system for a year. Yes, he may not. He only gotten 4 starts. But here's the thing about those 4 starts, and you can say whatever you want to. As a rookie, in those 4 starts, he never threw an interception.
Yeah.
Like, he threw some turnover-worthy throws that didn't get picked, but every quarterback does that every year.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't do anything to actually, like, turn the ball over outside of the one fumble to Tampa Bay, no. It was there.
No, it was the
Arizona game. What game was it that he threw the daggum ball?
It was Arizona. Yeah.
And so, there was that mistake, but he didn't make like typical rookie blunders. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be like, in my mind right now, Ritter, to me, his ceiling without the prime time choking, I'm just talking about the way he plays or like the abilities. Like, I think his ceiling in my mind, it really is like a Kirk Cousins. And if everything else goes right on this team, that might be all you need. Like, if you can build a defense, like you're looking like you're wanting to build, if you can have like, the positionless offense, focused around the run game, and you just need that point man, the ball distributor, be able to take shots when you every now and again, but for the most part, Ritter just gets the ball where it needs to be. I mean, look at what Tannehill was able to do in Tennessee with Arthur Smith. Like if he can get to that level, I think we're going to be fine. ATL supporter says, just like MLK, I have a dream that one day the Falcons will win multiple Super Bowls. I'm calling it now. I hope your dream comes to fruition.
Absolutely.
Willie Doc does bring up the point that Ridder is more accurate than Mariota and can lean on, like, and can, you know, run the ball himself. I think as to where Mariota's strength was running and he could pass a little bit, I think it's the other way around with Ridder. Like, his strength is going to be passing. And I think for all the knocks that everybody has on Arthur Smith's passing game, I think are going to look a lot better this year with Ridder under helm, because you didn't hear those same type of complaints with, you know, Tannehill up in Tennessee. So I think we're going to be closer to that than what we have seen the past 2 years is kind of what I'm getting at.
I think one of the things that I really liked watching him last year was one of the things we saw, and we saw some from Mariota. I'm not trying to take away from Mariota. We saw some, but the thing that we really didn't see from Matt Ryan for many years, we saw it a little bit later on in his career, and he did it sometime, but he had Ridder showed some really good, like, escapability. Like, things looked real bad in the pocket a couple times, and he was able to, like, figure a way out of it, get free a little bit, and then look downfield. Or now in his case, Matt Ryan was basically like, I just need to get free so that I can try to maybe get like a couple yards, so it's not a total loss on this play. Whereas Ridder, like, he can get free, try to look downfield. If nothing's there, he can run for it, and he can get you a first down, you know, with his legs in a much more, you know, much better fashion.
Right. Yeah. Brian says, I think the ceiling is a little higher than Cousins because of his ability, Ridder's ability to run. Yep. Yeah. I definitely agree that, you know, him being able to take off and run when things break down will be that he's the kind of, in a sense, he's the kind of quarterback that I always said I wanted after Ryan, or I said I wanted, you know, early on after Ryan, which is a guy who, if, you know, if need to, you know, can move, you know, can pick up, doesn't rely on it, but if the option presents itself, then, you know, he can take it and make it pay because of it.
Yeah, I'm going to highlight this because I don't hear it very often. I appreciate it, Willie Doc. I was right that
time.
There it is. It's awesome.
Let's say, hold on, John. You right, bro. You right. Like, you right more than that. Come on now. But no, I think that, you know, Dre says, I hope and pray DR9 keeps the home winning streak alive. Exactly. Like, there's a certain, like, air and maturity about Ridder that you hope, like, kind of like a Russell Wilson, you know, kind of like a, you know, Kirk Cousins, they were able to overcome their draft status. And, you know, that's what we here in Atlanta are hoping for Ridder. Chris says, I hope for guys like Grady, Good. Thank you. Good Lord. Because I hope the hype from guys like Grady about Ridder this offseason are true. Yeah, I'm very cynical when it comes to stuff like that. Like, what are these guys supposed to say? You know, is sometimes what I think. Like, are they supposed to come out? Like, is it Grady supposed to come up and go, man, dude, we're screwed. Yeah. Everything looks horrible.
So usually whenever, you know, the way you can tell when maybe things are not, super, you know, things are okay, but it's not like super praiseworthy, is when you'll hear them ask a question like that, and then they'll kind of talk around it.
Oh yeah,
like that. Well, that's how you know.
There was one point in time, I think it was after the rainstorm Carolina loss, like Grady let some of that stuff show. You know, he let some of that frustration of losing.
Same ish, different year, different day, whatever.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And he kind of let it be known. So I'm always appreciative of moments like that when those come across. But it's hard for me to like really take any kind of praise I hear from coaches or players about, you know, players taking another step. Like, that stuff will be proven pretty quickly when it comes to, you know, the preseason, when we start seeing like live bullets fly. And I hope y'all join us for the preseason. We're going to do some like live commentary, like come and watch along with us. Obviously we can't play the game, but we can sit here like this and talk to y'all while the game is going on. So hopefully y'all come and join us for that. Ken Folk says, is it just me or does Ritter and Mahomes sound alike? They might sound alike. I don't know. I don't analyze their talking all that much.
I would need to I know that the joke is Mahomes sounds like Kermit. And so by that measure, don't quite get that from Ritter, but I'd have to hear him like side by side. Like, listen to one, listen to the other, listen to one.
Now, this some I agree with. Ken Folk says that maybe this is just the eternal optimist in me. Some of y'all can, depending on how the next few, you know, seasons or goes, y'all can bring this back up if you want. But he says, I don't think we've seen the full potential of Arthur Smith as a play caller. I don't think so either. I keep leaning back on the 2020 of Tennessee Titans as being closer to what you see from Arthur Smith. Willie asked,
appreciate it, Willie.
He says, any more Madden simulations, JR? Loved it. I don't know. Like, that didn't go as well as I wanted it to, because of like just the nature of my computer and stuff like that. Like trying to play Madden and then recording it, it didn't really go the way I was hoping for it. So I was having to like play the game, record it, and then commentate over me playing the game, which I don't know.
Yeah.
That, and let's just be honest, I'm really not that good at Madden. If I start losing, I get frustrated and turn it off.
it's a weird situation.
Yeah, it was definitely, like I said, it was a neat idea that I would have to dump a lot more money into to be able to produce the way I wanted to. That's the thing that we've always done on this channel, is one of the unspoken mottos is that we try to be professional as we can be. And we try to put forth the best product that we can put forth. And if it's not a product that I'm proud of, then, it's not something I'm going to put out. He says, you and Jonathan, play Madden and simulate, Arthur Smith's play calls. The problem is I just don't think that they don't have like, unless it's just, I'm an idiot, I'm trying to find it. Like, their pistol formation isn't nearly as prevalent as what Arthur Smith used last year. Same thing with the diamond formation. So doing it like that didn't necessarily present itself.
Emmanuel, when do the practice for fans can come and watch start? I think that's next Thursday.
Yeah, I think so. I think it opens up next Thursday. And I know that next weekend it'll be open to the public. And I think we're going to try to be up there the 29th is tentatively what I'm going to say. Yeah, tentatively is what I'm going to put out there. Let's see. Anybody else? Dre says, don't turn it off just like I do. Reset the dang and freaking thing with the rest of the buttons.
So that's what the reset button is for.
Oh, reset button. Yeah, like I don't know. Shoot, man, I just get mad and just turn the whole thing off. I start losing. I'm like, dadgummit. I suck at this game. But anyway,
I just end up playing another game. I'm like, I'm not having fun. I'm just going to go to another game. I'll be better at that one.
Well, the problem is, okay, here's my problem, Matt. If I put it on rookie, it's too easy. Now I'm over here beating the computer like almost 100 points to nothing. And if I bump it up, it's still too easy. But then like the very next one, the one right before the hardest one, like it becomes more of a coin toss. And I'm that much of a sore loser that I don't want to lose, but I don't want to beat the team 100-0.
Yeah.
Charleston says, I love how in tune Arthur Smith and Desmond Ridder can become. Usually he has a QB for a year, you know, Tannehill, Ryan, Mariota. The football intelligence of Arthur and Desmond is my favorite. Hopefully that is something that like really comes to fruition. The fact that this will be the first time that Smith has gotten to truly pick a QB. You know, Cincinnati ran a lot of the same concepts. We've highlighted that in years past. So, you know, hopefully we start to see these things come to, like I said, you know, make themselves known.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is going to do it for us today. We appreciate y'all, as always, tuning in and joining us. Somebody said, oh, Dre, okay. They're talking to each other. Anyway. So, as always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grimm1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan?
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by and say hi. Rise up!
You over here hollering at folks. And if y'all are on the Threads thing, you can find Pound for Pound on Threads as well, under just Pound for Pound. And, yeah, keep an eye out for us up at training camp. Hopefully we'll be there next weekend. We'll be back live next Tuesday. We'll have something for this weekend. We finished up our the USS ATL voyage series as it made its way through the belt that was the universe that is the NFL. And so we'll have something else for you this weekend. And like I said, we'll be back live on Tuesday.
Yep.
As always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.